All right, so today we're taking a deep dive into Ezekiel, specifically chapters 6 and 7.
Ooh, okay.
And we're talking warnings of destruction.
Okay.
But this time, it's not just Jerusalem like we saw in some of those earlier chapters.
Right.
This time, the whole land of Israel is in the crosshairs.
Yeah, this is where things start to heat up.
Yeah, it feels like the scope of judgment really expands and we start to see this bigger picture unfolding.
Right, exactly.
And what's interesting to me is that Ezekiel isn't even in Israel when he's delivering these messages.
Right.
He's in exile, remember, far away in Babylon.
Right.
But his words are echoing back to the homeland, creating this sense of impending doom from afar.
Yeah, it's like this weight hanging over them, even across the distance.
That's a good way to put it. And then there's this detail that always gets me, how Ezekiel directs his pronouncements to the mountains, hills, and valleys.
Right.
It's like the land itself is being held accountable.
It's very evocative, isn't it? And it's not just random poetic imagery.
Right.
Mountains, especially for the exiled Israelites, represent the promised land, this place filled with meaning and memory.
Oh.
Exactly. So when Ezekiel addresses the mountains, it's like he's tapping into their deepest longings and then shattering those hopes with the reality of destruction.
Okay, so that sets the stage for chapter 6, where we see the destruction of the high places.
Right.
And it starts with Ezekiel physically turning towards the mountains of Israel as he delivers God's message.
Oh.
It's a very powerful visual. It's almost like he's acting out the confrontation.
Yeah, and it makes you think about those mountains representing home, the land promised to their ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're becoming these symbols of judgment.
And it all centers around these high places, these local shrines and altars that were scattered throughout Israel.
Right.
Which, you know, for those who really strictly followed Jewish tradition,
yeah,
they really believed that worship should be centralized in the Jerusalem temple.
Exactly. And these high places, with their localized practices, were seen as a deviation from that central authority.
Right. And then, of course, there's the issue of idol worship.
Yes.
Many of these high places adopted practices from neighboring cultures.
Right.
Things that were considered, you know, completely blasphemous, according to Israelite belief.
Yeah. And this brings us back to, you know, the heart of the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments, which explicitly forbid the creation of idols.
Right.
This is a core principle of their faith.
And so Ezekiel really doesn't hold back when he's describing the consequences.
No, he doesn't.
He paints this really vivid and frankly disturbing picture of destruction.
Yeah.
Altars torn down, incense shattered, even corpses scattered around the idols.
It's unsettling imagery for sure.
Oh yeah, it's meant to be.
And it's not just about physical destruction, but also about spiritual defilement.
Right.
These high places, once places of worship,
mm-hmm.
now they're painted, unusable. And for the Israelites, both those in exile and those still in the land,
yeah,
this would have been a horrifying image.
But the punishment goes beyond just the physical, doesn't it?
Right.
There's the psychological torment as well.
Yes.
The text talks about those who escape remembering their actions and being filled with regret for turning away from God.
Like a double punishment.
Yeah.
They lose their homeland, and then they're burdened by the weight of their guilt.
There's that line in verse 9, "Then they will be loathsome in their own sight for the evils that they have committed, for all their abominations."
Hmm.
Imagine carrying that burden, that sense of self-loathing.
Heavy stuff.
It's really heartbreaking. But in the midst of all this judgment, we also see this glimpse of God's own grief.
Right.
Ezekiel says, "How I was crushed by their wanton heart." It kind of reveals the emotional impact of Israel's choices.
It reminds us that God isn't this distant, unfeeling deity.
Right.
He's deeply invested in the well-being of his people. And their actions cause him genuine pain. It adds this whole other layer to the story, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Then we come to the second oracle in chapter 6, and Ezekiel really ramps up the drama.
Yeah, he does.
He's clapping his hands, he's stamping his foot, like he can barely contain God's anger.
It's powerful.
It is. And those actions aren't just for show.
No.
They're meant to convey the intensity of God's fury. I mean, think about it. Clapping's often a way to get attention, to express frustration, even anger.
Right.
And the foot stamping, and that's pure rage, right?
Directed at the vile abominations committed by the house of Israel, he even cries out, "Alas!"
Mm-hmm.
Adding a layer of sorrow and lament to his pronouncements.
And then he lays out the punishment, death by sword, famine, and pestilence. These weren't abstract concepts.
No, not at all.
These were the brutal realities of war, siege, and disease.
And here's where Ezekiel, being a priest, really skillfully weaves in language from the book of Leviticus,
yeah,
specifically the covenant curses outlined in chapter 26. It's like he's referencing a legal document, showing how Israel's actions directly violated the terms of their agreement with God.
He's not mincing words. He's basically saying, look, you brought this on yourselves. And by drawing on those earlier scriptures, he's giving his pronouncements even more weight and authority.
It's a brilliant move.
Mm-hmm.
He connects past warnings with present consequences. And for the Israelites, both in exile and back in the land, it would have been a stark reminder of their history, their covenant, and the weight of their choices.
So chapter 6 really sets the stage, but things are about to get even more intense in chapter 7.
Yeah.
So are you ready to dive into that?
Absolutely. Let's see how Ezekiel builds on these themes of judgment, consequence, and the impending end for the land of Israel.
Yeah, chapter 7 really does kick things up a notch. It starts with this phrase, the end has come.
Right.
And it's repeated over and over like a drumbeat of doom. You can almost feel the sense of urgency and finality.
It's powerful stuff.
And that repetition is intentional.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Remember how in chapter 6, Ezekiel was drawing on Leviticus?
Right.
Well, now he's tapping into the words of earlier prophets, using their pronouncements to give his message even more weight.
Exactly.
So when we hear the end has come, it's not just some general statement.
No.
It's directly connected to those earlier prophecies.
Like the one from Amos?
Yeah, the one about the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel.
Right.
So Ezekiel is basically applying those words to Judah, drawing a parallel between the past destruction of the northern kingdom and the impending doom of the southern kingdom. It's like history is repeating itself.
Right.
And this time, the consequences are even greater. Really makes you think about how our choices echo through time.
It does, doesn't it?
And then there's this whole concept of the day of the Lord.
Right.
You mentioned it earlier, but I think we need to unpack that a bit more.
Okay, sure.
So initially, when people heard about the day of the Lord, they thought it would be this day of victory. A time when God would intervene and rescue them from their enemies.
Right, a day of celebration.
But prophets like Amos and Ezekiel, they reframed it.
Yeah.
They said, no, this is a day of judgment, a day of reckoning.
It's a pretty stark contrast.
So instead of expecting this divine rescue mission, they should be bracing themselves for something much darker.
Exactly. It completely changes the tone.
Yeah, it does. And Ezekiel really emphasizes the imminence of this judgment. He uses phrases like, the day is near and the day draws near, creating this sense of urgency. It's almost like a countdown clock ticking down to disaster.
Yeah, no more wishful thinking. The time for change has run out.
And it's not just abstract pronouncements. He gets into the nitty-gritty of what this end will actually look like.
Right.
He talks about commerce grinding to a halt, the economy collapsing, even silver and gold becoming worthless.
It's a complete societal breakdown. Everything they relied on, everything they valued, is just crumbling before their eyes.
Can you imagine what that would feel like? Your whole world falling apart.
I mean, it's hard to even fathom.
And then on top of that, he describes the horrors of war.
Yeah.
The sound of the horn calling people to defend themselves, but it's too late.
Right.
The sword outside the city and inside, pestilence and famine are raging.
It's a picture of utter helplessness and despair.
And the people are demoralized.
Yeah.
Their hands grow feeble.
Mm-hmm.
Their knees turn to water.
They even shave their heads in grief.
Even the leaders are offering no guidance.
Like everyone has given up hope.
What strikes me is how Ezekiel connects this economic collapse to the misuse of silver and gold for idolatry.
Right.
It's almost like their obsession with wealth and material possessions led to their downfall.
It's a powerful reminder, isn't it, that putting our trust in anything other than God will ultimately leave us empty and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
True security comes from aligning ourselves with God's will, not from chasing after fleeting material wealth.
Wouldn't some people say that God is being too harsh here?
Hmm.
I mean, all this talk of destruction and judgment.
Yeah, I could see why people would say that.
How do we reconcile this image of a vengeful God with the idea of a loving and merciful God?
Yeah, that's a question people have wrestled with for centuries.
Right.
And it's important to remember that we're looking at this text through a modern lens.
Mm-hmm.
The ancient Israelites had a very different understanding of God and his role in the world.
So how do we make sense of it today?
I think the key is to focus on the core message, accountability, and consequence. Our choices have repercussions,
right?
Both for ourselves and for those around us.
Mm-hmm.
And while we may not face the same kind of national judgment as ancient Israel, the principle still applies.
Yeah.
We can't escape the consequences of our actions.
It's like that saying, what goes around comes around.
Exactly. And while we may not always experience immediate consequences for our actions,
mm-hmm.
there's a sense in which we all face a day of reckoning at some point, whether it's in this life or the next, we will be held accountable for the choices we make.
So this chapter is really a wake-up call for the Israelites.
Yeah.
They can't just sit around hoping for a quick return to normal life.
Right.
They have to confront the reality of their situation.
It's like having the rug pulled out from under them.
Yeah.
And while it's a harsh message, it's also an opportunity for them to turn back to God, to repent of their wrongdoing, and to rebuild their lives on a foundation of faith and obedience.
So even in the midst of all this darkness and despair, there's a glimmer of hope.
Absolutely. Even in judgment, God's love and mercy are present. He doesn't desire the destruction of his people. He longs for their restoration, their return to him.
That's a powerful message.
It is.
Seems like there's a lot to unpack here, both for the Israelites back then and for us today.
You're absolutely right. These chapters challenge us to think deeply about our own lives, our choices, and the consequences that follow.
You know, as we've been going through these chapters, I keep coming back to how Ezekiel uses those earlier scriptures.
Yeah.
It's like he's not just showing off his biblical knowledge.
Right.
You know, he's really strategically weaving those texts into his own message to give it even more weight.
He's basically saying, look, this isn't just me talking. This is the voice of God echoing through the ages.
And for the Israelites in exile, hearing those familiar words, those warnings from their own history, that would have been a powerful wake-up call.
Oh, absolutely. Imagine, they're already dealing with the trauma of exile, the loss of their homeland.
Right.
And now they're being told that things are going to get even worse.
Yeah. What must that have been like?
I mean, talk about unsettling. It would have forced them to confront the reality of their situation, to grapple with the consequences of their choices.
And really examine their relationship with God.
Yeah, it's like this huge crisis of faith.
But it seems like that's exactly the point, right?
I think so.
These chapters are designed to shake them out of their complacency,
right,
to make them realize that they can't just go through the motions of religion.
It's not enough to just go through the rituals, offer sacrifices, say the right words.
So true faith requires a transformation of the heart.
Absolutely. A willingness to turn away from sin and embrace God's will for their lives.
Okay, so how do we apply this to our lives today? I mean, we may not be facing the same kind of non-animal judgment as ancient Israel.
Right, but the core message is still relevant.
How so?
We all make choices that have consequences.
Right.
Both for ourselves and for those around us. And sometimes those consequences can be pretty devastating.
It's like we're constantly sowing seeds and eventually we're going to reap what we've sown.
Exactly. And while we may not always see the immediate impact of our choices, the ripple effects can be far-reaching.
So it's not just about avoiding punishment.
No, it's about living intentionally.
Okay.
Making choices that align with our values and beliefs.
Recognizing that we have a responsibility to each other.
Yes, and to the world around us. Our choices matter.
Wow, that's a lot to take in.
It is.
It's been a really intense deep dive into these chapters.
Yeah.
But it's definitely given me a lot to think about.
Me too. I think Ezekiel's words have a way of challenging us, pushing us to examine our lives and consider how we're living in light of God's call to faithfulness and obedience.
Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into Ezekiel chapters 6 and 7.
Sounds good.
It's been a journey, but I think a worthwhile one.
Definitely.
And I hope that our listeners will take these insights to heart and, you know, maybe continue to explore these themes in their own lives.
That would be great.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.